Describe the community that you live in.
The community that I lived in was not a really big community. It probably was only 4 or 5 miles along Topolocka Road, and it was a farming community made up of hard-working farm people, and there were a fair number of children and families. There was one church in the community and one school for the smaller students, one community store, and one family who kept some supplies that they sold from their house. There was a justice of the peace that lived in this particular community, and he did some legal work with deeds, and sometimes he settled minor disputes or performed marriages. The pastor in the church usually lived in another community and had another occupation because churches were not able to pay a full-time person. The doctor that was used in this community did not live in this community, but lived about 4 or 5 miles away in another community. And until the mid-40s, people did not go to his office. He came to the home to do what doctrine that he did. The doctor delivered babies at home because of the cost. But during World War II, when soldiers' wives could have their babies delivered free and paid for by the government at a hospital, this brought a great change in the lives of expectant mothers, because they discovered that by going to the hospital, they would be given better care and many babies' lives could be saved. And school teachers that were in the community, his school usually came from another community, and when they came in, they would find a home that would want to make some extra money by boarding the teachers. Teachers were important people in the community and usually had no trouble finding a family who would like to make some extra money. Single women had better prospects for marriage if they went into a different community and away from their own home. And many of the teachers took leading parts in the social activities of the community. Teachers guided their pupils in staging plays and other activities such as egg hunts and spelling contests or things like that. And this would involve the parents in the school. And this was necessary because the schools needed all the support they could get from the parents to encourage children to stay in school. There was probably no community that did not have one or two groups of people in the community who made music. Sometime during the year there would be a fiddler's contest where these groups would come together and try to out-fiddle or outplay each other with the different instruments that they had. Many Saturday nights were spent going to some group to hear them make music. Neighbors in the community had to rely on each other a lot, especially if there were problems that came up they couldn't handle themselves. Accidents might call for help with the planning of the harvesting, and the illness might call for around-the-clock care. So various families would donate a portion of their time, day or night, until the family was able to handle it again. There might be some divisions in a community, but if a disaster came, everybody pulled together until they were able to go back to the normal way of life.
What about the different students of the white people?
this community only had one school, and it was for white children because blacks did not actually live right in the community. They lived more to the south and had their own school in another community. My house that I lived in when I was growing up was the coldest house that I had ever lived in. It was a wood house, three rooms on each side with an enclosed hallway through the center. The top of the house was pointed and had a huge loft. The top was tin, but there was very little insulation under the tin. And in the wintertime, when the wind would blow hard, sometimes the wind would whistle under the house so that rugs on the floor would be lifted up because of the wind blowing through the cracks. Our house was built from some pine trees that were grown in the valley and had probably been sawed by a sawmill in the community. The house was built in 1912. The ceilings were high, and this caused a lot of the heat to be lost. There were three fireplaces in various rooms in the house, plus the kitchen stove for heating and cooking. My parents owned 40 acres of mountain land, not too far away, but it was a long, hard process to cut the trees and bring home for them to saw and split into wood for the fireplaces. Two-thirds of the house was surrounded by porches where a lot of the work would be done in the shade with a cool breeze in the summertime. A hand-dug well was on the back porch. Three tubs of water had to be drawn by hand and well bucket on the day my mother decided to wash. The well was deep, and during the dry summers, we often had to haul water from the creek for the washing of clothes. The house was cold in the winter, but in the summer, the house was cooler than most people because of the high ceilings and because of the trees that were located around the house to keep the roof shady. The house had wood floors, and it wasn't unusual to stick a splinter in your foot if you started running through the long hallway and didn't pick up your feet. At our house, in the summer when you did any type of cooking, the house became very hot. In the summer, with the big wood stove, we tried to do the cooking early in the morning and cooked enough to last the whole day so that the house would not be so hot at night when we got ready to go to bed.
About growing cotton.
Cotton was a main source of income for us for many, many years. And it was probably the most unstable crop we grew. If the weather was too cold, too wet, too dry, then it had an effect on the cotton. A mild weather would not kill the insects as they should have. So even though the cotton, you might get the cotton planted early, the insects would not be destroyed, so they would get an early start also. Cotton needed fertilizer and needed to be rotated with other crops on the farm to keep from depleting the soil.
Cotton was planted very thick to assure a good stand of plants. Then the excess plants had to be chopped out. Hoeing and plowing were necessary during May and June to keep grass and weeds from crowding out the cotton plants. If cotton prices were poor, prices would be high, but there would be little cotton for you to sell, so little money would come in. But if the crops were good, the markets would be flooded and the prices would be so low, loans could not be paid off that had been borrowed to make the crop. I remember at one time about 15 bales of cotton standing in our yard because the price was so low. My father was trying to hold the cotton until spring, hoping that the market wouldn't be so flooded then and that the prices would rise. Finally, the government came in with a plan to limit the amount of acres containing cotton and to help farmers to get loans that would last from the planting season until the harvest time. And they tried to encourage diversified farming so that there would be other ways of bringing in cash so the farmer wouldn't have to depend on cotton. The cotton was the main crop that they only controlled at that time. A farmer was allotted so many acres to be planted, and when the crop reached a certain age, the people came to measure the acreage. If overplanting had occurred, the crop was destroyed by flowering. If the cotton crop was poor, only the interest would be paid, and the farmer would wonder whether the bank would loan him additional money the next spring to start another crop. Sometimes farmers were reimbursed for some of the crops they didn't grow. The schools tried to help the farmer and keep their students in school also. Sometimes the school would have a half-day schedule. Classes would follow one right after the other with no study periods and no PE, so that school could be dismissed at 12 o'clock. And there would be a mad rush to get home and eat lunch and be in the field by 1. One year when they didn't use this schedule, I had to miss the 2 first weeks of school to get cotton. So a lot of the things that went on were against the farmer making a go with the cotton crop.
Mm-hmm. What about the, you said you didn't like picking cotton, huh?
Picking cotton made my back hurt. One favorable thing that I can say about 31 years of teaching school, it never made my back hurt. When you pick cotton, you had to have, the weather was always hot, especially at the beginning of the season. And your parents would make long sacks with a strap to hang on your shoulder that you put the cotton in. And you had to stay bent over to pick the cotton because you didn't want the cotton to grow too tall. And you fill these sacks, and baskets were placed at intervals along the row so that you, when you got your sack full, you could empty. But it was hot and dry. The ground was hot. You were thirsty. And the sacks would get heavy sometimes before you got to a place to empty. And the cotton had to be packed into the baskets. And at the end of the day, all the cotton had to be carried to the house or to the barn. And if you didn't carry the mules and the wagon to the field, then these baskets of cotton had to be carried home on your back, and some of the baskets would hold 75 and 100 pounds of cotton that had to be brought in. And another reason we didn't like picking cotton or working in the fields because of lack of water. Somebody had to be a water boy, and it was always impressed on us as kids growing up that when my father was out working in the fields and it was very hot, he had to have water. And before we had refrigerators to make ice, you just drew